This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hello, from my new studio.
Hello, it looks great. Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody. Old studio.
And Justin Davis.
Hello.
We have a great show for you this week. It is Game of the Year Watch time. Game of the Year Watch continues. We finally got a look at the PS5 UI, and there's some very interesting features on there. We know the launch lineup for Xbox Series X and S. But first, I want to thank Sam, for my Halloween care package that he sent over today.
I was wondering if you'd have gotten that or opened it yet.
Yeah, this is so fun. Sam sent me a record that includes apparently a version of the Munsters intro that rips.
Yeah. It's all surf, you know, like guitar, but it's like it's a really cool version of the Munsters theme.
Yes. I imagine this is 60s era instrumental rock.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
I thought Kingo would like to dance to that.
He would like to dance to this. Good. And it also includes in here, if I can get this out safely. Here
we go. So embarrassing. This is my first fan letter in so many years to GameScoop.
He sent me a Garbage Pail Kid.
Uh-huh.
And this one is Doomsday Dom number 567A. And I actually have a very extensive Garbage Pail Kid collection. This entire book is This is all Garbage Pail Kids.
I sent that to you because
I don't have this one.
Yes. Well, it's Into the World theme. That's the only thing I was going with there. This was like Doomsday Tom.
And it actually, won't even have to rearrange too much. It's near the back of.
Wow, that's really crazy that it's like actually part of your current collection.
I even have a couple.
It was the perfect gift.
Yeah. I even have a couple unopened packages of Garbage Pail Kids. So that was very nice surprise.
That is really cool. I will look out for Series 5 Garbage Pail Kids because those just turn up all the time for me. I've never run into those again. Hey, is there a Damon? Is there a Damon one?
There is, but it's D-A-M-O-N.
Okay, we'll fix
that. Not one that spells it.
Okay.
The correct way.
Of course.
Okay, enough nonsense. Game of the Year Watch. It's Q4, which can only mean one thing. It's time for Q4 Justin. How is Q4... getting along these days?
Yeah, I was just saying before the show started that I crashed on my couch at 8 p.m. and then slept for 11 hours.
Cool.
And because we were working so hard on Amazon Prime Day that then as it was winding down, I just fell asleep and crashed and we were watching The Good Place.
That's Black Friday Eve, right?
Yeah, it is this year. Q4 Justin's in full effect because then it's Holiday Gift Guide and then it's Black Friday and then it's the console launches. Oh, he's here.
Better have your pumpkin candles on hand. Mm.
I can't even go out and get PSLs this year. I need to learn to make them at home.
Is that short for pumpkin spice latte? Oh,
yes, yeah. But I've never heard that shorthand before.
PSL?
PSL? Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys got to catch up.
Oh, okay. It sounds even worse than the real thing.
I'm way beyond. I'm evolved way beyond the latte. I have pumpkin spice cereal. I have pumpkin spice Pop-Tarts. A pumpkin spice candle, for sure. 100%. This is the only way to cope.
I don't think I have any pumpkins or spice. No, pumpkins.
Okay, for real. Game of the Year watch. The past quarter, we added 3 new 10s. To the legacy of 10 out of 10s from IGN. Splunky 2, which I know we can't speak too much to because I'm the only one that plays it. But there's also Crusader Kings 3, which seems to be a very hardcore RPG. And then Flight Simulator, reviewed by our good friend Seth Macy from the great state of Maine. So this joins The Last of Us Part 2 and Half-Life Alyx for 5 games that have gotten a 10 this year. Other notable games
that are eligible because we also gave Overwatch a 10, but it's not eligible for Game of the Year. We should explain that because
Persona 5, what is it, Golden?
Yes, and Persona 5 Golden. Yeah,
is it Golden?
Four Golden.
Yes, that's it. Other games that people have bandied around, a lot of people talk about Hades as their Game of the Year this year. Justin, are you still playing that one?
Yeah, Hades is great. Yeah, don't have enough good things to say about it.
Yeah, that one's really, really good. Of course, Animal Crossing, huge cultural phenomenon early this year. Sam reviewed that one.
That's my goatee also.
That's your goatee? Mm-hmm. People really like Ori and the Will of the Wisps. More people are getting a chance to play that now because it's now out on Switch.
And coming to Series X.
Is it one of the launch games?
Yeah, we'll on the launch list that we'll talk about. Spoilers.
Yeah. Then, of course, there's Final Fantasy VII Remake and Doom Eternal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's sort of the short list of games that have either gotten a 10. Let's be honest, not too many people are going to be fighting for Spelunky 2 at the end of the year when it comes to Game of the Year talks. I realize it's a very niche title designed specifically for me to play.
Well, that's why we have the Danny Awards.
That is exactly why we have.
Remember the giant envelope? I just remember it.
I do remember. What's that, Sam?
What's your game of the year, Damon?
Ghosts of Tsushima.
Okay.
Nice.
As of right now. That's yours too.
That's yours too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you almost left it off the list, Dan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I have a list. That's why I have notes here in front of me. I pulled the Facebook group. And the results are pretty interesting. But real quick before we get there, Justin, what would you say is your game of the year so far?
Probably Animal Crossing. I really, really loved Spiritfarer and don't have enough good things to say about it, which, you know, Tom gave a 9 and I totally agree with. I haven't gone back and ever finished it. So I want to go back and see how it sticks to landing. But the writing is so heartfelt and good that my impression is that once I finish it, my opinion of it will probably even climb. So I think right now it's probably Animal Crossing number one with Spiritfarer just a hair below it at number two.
Yeah, I did want to also mention Spiritfarer. I see that talked a lot, mentioned in people's games, favorite games of the year so far.
It's on Game Pass if you have an Xbox.
Very cool.
We're really so lucky the Dami Awards are not a vote because it would be two people Ghost, two people Animal Crossing. And there'd be no way to win that.
We need a tiebreaker.
The Dami Awards are a benevolent dictatorship.
I guess so. It's a good point.
So let's see. I pulled the Facebook group, which, you know, anyone who listens to this show should probably consider joining because it's a very fun, welcoming group. All these games that I just mentioned and The Last of Us Part 2 won by just... by just a landslide, more than twice the amount of votes as the second place entry, which is Ghost of Tsushima.
Wow. Okay.
It's a very, very, very clear winner among the GameScoop audience, at least in that
both
area.
PlayStation exclusives and Final Fantasy VII, too. So that's very funny that there's it was a big year for PlayStation. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Huzzah.
For PlayStation exclusives. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then it's funny, next to each entry, you get, you know, they show the face of the last three people who voted for that game. And on Ghost of Tsushima, the last person that voted for it was none other than IGN publisher John Davison.
Oh.
On our Facebook group?
Yeah.
Does that count as cheating?
That's not cheating. But apparently, Tina, that's John shares our shares our pick for Game of the Year so far. So
that can't be the tiebreaker.
No. I can't. We said it wasn't cheating.
What we're going to do is we're going to bring in Seth, and then he's just going to say Flight Simulator, and then we're just going to be back where we started.
We're back at square one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We could do ranked choice voting.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. Sam, Animal Crossing's at number three with the GameScape group.
Yeah, yep. That's nice.
And yeah, way at the very, very bottom with two votes is Spelunky 2. And those aren't from me. That's two other people.
Yeah.
Two other people than myself.
Yeah, sure. Okay, sure. Well, I guess we don't have any way of seeing who they were, so we'll never really know, but we'll just have to take your word for it. There was I was thinking about Animal Crossing, and, like, you know, it's the only time that there's been kind of like a worldwide cultural phenomenon since Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. And I'm excluding Fortnite because that's ongoing, because these are kind of like fad ones. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, this time we'll probably have Animal Crossing as a discussion about Game of the Year, I think. But Pokemon Go is really controversial because it got a bad review. And it was like, you know, there's no such thing as an objectively bad game, but it was an objectively buggy game. And it was just hard to play right at the start and a mess. And it didn't really resolve a lot of that stuff until the next year even. So, yeah, I remember like people saying like, we can't, you know, that shouldn't even be considered. I don't think we ended up nominating it even. But so I'm thankful that we have a game that, you know, people like, that's also got a good review, thanks to this guy. And and it's also a big cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, it's kind of the same reason why we have the top 100 best games versus the top 100 most influential, which spoilers we're working through right now to update. There's a differentiation between being a cultural phenomenon and then being a cultural phenomenon, but also a fundamentally good game, which Animal Crossing has to its benefit. So Pokemon Go is definitely in one camp and not necessarily both. So it makes a big distinction for things like Game of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, famous example of that is like Mortal Kombat or E.T., where like those games don't hold up and they're not fun. They're not great games, but like they were talked, like Mortal Kombat was talked about in Congress. You know, and it resulted in the ESRB. And E.T. is, you know, famous just as being the pit of jokes for a very long time, the butt of jokes. And
I thought it was good.
It was a good pun.
And also, it was also shut down the game industry. Sometimes it's scapegoated as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. E.T. spends a lot of his time in a pit in that game.
True. That's very true.
And I do want to clarify, we gave Pokemon Go a 7, which isn't a bad review.
But probably not a Game of the Year contender,
right? Yeah,
that was before we had the 10-point scale too. So that meant like we just barely think it's a 7.
yeah, that's true.
It's 7-ish.
Yeah. If we wanted to make a short list, like 5 games that we would be considering for Game of the Year so far, Last of Us Part 2, I would say Half-Life Alyx, Ghost of Tsushima, Animal Crossing, but what would that fifth one be? Maybe.
Well,
maybe it is Hades.
Hades,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, maybe it would be Hades. I don't know.
What'd you say, Tina?
If it was as of right now, because obviously we have a couple other big games coming.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Cyberpunk and Assassin's Creed and stuff like that are about to blow our minds. Miles Morales,
Watch Dogs.
People are excited for those games.
Yeah, still to come. Cyberpunk, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Watch Dogs Legion, Spider-Man Miles Morales, and Demon's Souls. As well,
maybe Pokemon Snap.
I also wonder if like Genshin Impact is gonna have an impact on people's decision making. Yeah, because I haven't played it yet, but it's become it's blown up as kind of more than it started off as, you know, the Breath of the Wild, like, which obviously people are still acknowledging, including in our own review. But I imagine as it picks up and creates a bit of its own community, that might be another contender by come November.
Yeah, I know we talked about that a little bit last week after Sam and I checked it out, and we weren't, you know, super blown away by it, but IGN gave it a 9, and I know a lot of people out there are playing this game. Someone wrote in to say the game hasn't been out very long. Someone wrote in to GameScape and said he's spent $150 in the game.
Please,
and he loves it. He says he loves it.
Well, clearly.
I downloaded it and really didn't like it. actually. I didn't care for it at all. I mean, I read our review and I'm like, okay, like those are good points, but it's like not, I actually don't agree with the Breath of the Wild comparison. You know, it's an open world game and has that art style and you have a glider and then that's where the comparisons end.
It's got the grass.
It's got the grass, but there's no,
I mean,
it's missing the point. It's superficially like Breath of the Wild, but Breath of the Wild has all the reactivity and improvisation and like all the crazy stuff you can do with the physics system in the world that like none of that's in Genshin Impact. Like it's a superficial comparison because you're gliding around a really pretty open world. And I don't know. Like I said, I respect the people that like it, but man, like I don't see it for myself.
You know, like I think there's a loop that I haven't gotten to in it yet. And I understand that, you know, like I would like to get to that. And what's cool is that it involves exploration. I think that's great. That's my jam. But what I hear people keep plugging to me is that there's really good elemental combinations and they think that's like really neat. And so I think that sounds like a good system too. But the whole thing has a sheen that causes me just as like a consumer or a critic to be suspicious just because it's free to play and because it's always online and it's a little bit chuggy because of that. And it's just weird. It's just like, it's a feeling I'm not used to. It's like when you're playing a game that has a bunch of advertisements. That's just so ever present. And, you know, to not have that, to pay to not have that is something you're paying for when you pay for a game like Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's move on. Hopefully everyone got a chance to see the demonstration of the PlayStation 5 UI earlier today, the user interface. It wasn't really the visuals that struck out to me. There's some features that I think are really interesting, like activities and percentage completion of basically like levels and activities and games. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like really cool. They were showing off Sackboy's big adventure or whatever that game is, and then it told you like you have 10 minutes left in this level.
Yeah,
and I think that's so interesting. It also kind of seems to be addressing what we were talking about maybe a couple episodes ago, Justin, how you were saying like video games are unique that they don't let you skip to whatever part of them you want to, and it kind of, I mean, it looks like it was you were able to sort of skip around at least with that game with Sackboy.
Yeah. It's going to be on a game-by-game basis, but they really did play up the fact that like it's going to present you this menu of activities and like, what would you like to do in this game right now? And, you know, here's how long it will take you. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I don't know where that data would be coming from. It's also interesting to think like if they implemented that into the PlayStation Store, so like while you're browsing games, before you even make a purchase, like for Red Dead Redemption 2, he's like 80 hours. It'll take you 80 hours to finish this game.
I know you're probably going to go through a list of features, but like that watch along thing was super cool to me. I like the idea of having somebody picture in picture and just kind of moving it out of the way and you can just see what they're playing. Like that's how I play games. I'm usually talking to somebody else while I'm playing a game about the same game that I'm playing, kind of near each other. And like, I think that'd be really cool to be able to like, just kind of like, just pop that up and be like, I'm stuck here, or pop that up and be like, you know, like, did you see this? This was crazy, you know, or just see where the other person is and compete. I think it's really funny.
So I think I missed that one. Can you break that down for me? Like I'm playing a game. I can phone a friend.
Yeah. And it shows them picture in picture.
You can share your screen.
It's not really like a phone a friend feature. It's more just like a hangout, a watch party kind of feature. So they actually showed an example where somebody was playing Uncharted Lost Legacy in a picture in picture mode. And you can, I think there's some levels of features where you can tweak it around. You can drag it around whatever part of the screen you prefer to put it into. But I actually, when I was watching that, I was like, why would I want to do that? But Sam, the way you're describing it is a lot more how I might use it is if I'm playing the same game as someone else. And instead of just kind of like incrementally going, okay, what part are you at now? You can kind of see where your friend is at the same time. But if you're worried about spoilers and one person's playing a little bit faster than you, I can see that being kind of disruptive to the experience too.
But they talked about that. Like, and that was something that I wanted to highlight that I thought was so interesting. Like, you know, spoiler avoidance is like not some revolutionary thing. Like, I think it was Miranda at IGN pointed out, like, we do that in our game guides, right? Like, we structure our guides that way to avoid people being spoiled. But did we lose Damon?
Yeah.
Whoa, what happened? Why'd you lose me?
Your video's out.
There you go.
He's back.
I'm back.
But I think it's crazy interesting that the PS5 at the actual UI level like acknowledges spoiler avoidance as like a concern. And like, there's some software, I think game developers have to flag it as like, you took a screenshot or a video that's like later in our game. And if you send it to someone else, it'll have a little, it said they would have a little spoiler warning on it. And like, they don't need to open that picture or video if it has like, hey, you might be spoiled by something you see in this game. And again, like IGN's been thinking about our content that way for years, but just to hear that acknowledged, like baked into the UI of the console itself, I thought was very clever and showed like a deep level of understanding of how this is actually going to be used and consumed with on a day-to-day basis.
I'm sure they had that for the watching live feature, but definitely for screen capture, video capture. My favorite thing, though, just to jump in because it's relevant here, the thing I hate the most about the PS4 when you do screenshot captures is I sometimes like to rapidly take like, okay, slightly tweak my angle, slightly tweak how my protagonist is standing or whatever else. And if you have to wait a beat for the like screenshot capture notification to go away, because if you press it again, you'll get that notification in your screenshot. And sometimes you miss something happening in the background. So it really diminishes the experience there. But it sounds like, or it seems like, based on the fact that they took a couple rapid succession screenshots, it seems like they got rid of that. So that's the best part of the presentation as far as I saw it.
I had that same problem, and I didn't even notice that tweak.
I was just going to say they were a little cagey about the specifics, but it sounds like it works. Like, you can pick the frame that you want, right? Like, when you hit the screenshot button, it's not just like, here's your frame. I think they said you can sort of pick the frame that you like the most. That's perfect. So then, you know, you don't need to necessarily... It sounded to me that it almost works like live photos in on your iPhone. But we'll see. Yeah, it was really cool.
Except every frame is an actual good photo. Whereas like live photos, you're like, why are 20% of these just a blur? How did this even happen? I like how Xbox has already tied their screenshotting and sharing to an app. It's like, it's just on your phone immediately. And I'm actually surprised that PlayStation's not doing that same thing, and they'll probably get there. But like, as soon as I saw them being like, yeah, you can use voice to post your stuff on Twitter, I was like, well, it'd be so much better if it was on my phone immediately to be able to do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Voice dictation is nice, though.
Yeah.
If it works.
Although I like the trackpad, like being able to swipe quickly between letters works really well on the PS4.
Yeah,
you've mentioned that. I've been using that since you... I never even knew that it was a thing. I've never touched the trackpad using it, and now I'm starting to get used to it. Is that going to be on the PS5?
Well, I mean,
it
I
has
imagine...
the trackpad.
I imagine they'll still use the same functionality, but having dictation as an additional thing is good. But interestingly enough, they actually didn't show the dictation live because Fitzhuman was narrating, and then it was clearly like captured from a previous session. So I wonder how accurate it is. I'm sure it is, but it was just interesting that they did it that way.
I got like this little pang of anxiety when he was doing that. I was like, oh, it's going to capture, like it's going to start saying exactly what he's going to say, which would have been a really cute thing. But
yeah. Getting back to like the time left in activities and levels, I wonder where that information is coming from.
Is it
the developers just guessing? Is it like based on average playtesting?
Yeah, or
is
it's average probably.
I think they said, I'll have to go back and listen to the video, but I think they said it's dynamic. So my takeaway from that, like there's dumb ways that this could work or like really, really fancy ways that this could work. And like the fancy way it would work is like it recognizes where you're going through that game quickly or slowly. Like, oh, they did the last three levels at this pace. So this is how much time we think it's going to take them to complete this next activity, this next section. And I'll have to go back and watch, but I think they did say that it's like a dynamic representation of time that's like specific to the person, I think.
That would be hilarious because you can like they'll say like, oh, the average person takes this, you know, 1 hour, but given your speed, maybe 3 hours for you. Let's allow a little bit more time.
Yeah. That's like the Wii Fit balance board telling you how overweight you are. Like, I don't need that.
It also, I mean,
I don't care how cute the voice is.
Yeah. All those features plus the, you know, game help stuff, all that stuff seems so cool and they spent so much time talking about it. But it strikes me as something that like we're going to see it in first party games, right? And then they'll arm twist some third parties into doing it. But like a lot of games probably just aren't going to support all that stuff. Like it seems like a lot of like upkeep and work on their part.
It's also PS Plus only.
That's clever.
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
Some of it. Yeah. Especially the game help, right? Sam, what did you think about the game help features?
So I think the dream is to be able to play a game and have, you know, the thing that you need help you right away. But there's also a problem with that, in that, you know, you're at the mercy of the people that made that game who don't want to spoil it and they don't want you to break their game. And Sony probably, you know, will include really cool, helpful stuff. But like, there's something to be said for the people that are telling you to, like, you if you're frustrated with this, spam the boss this way. And I don't think you're going to get that type of stuff. Now, it's also possible that they will outsource where they get that from. And so it'll be, you know, like people like even us or people that, like, you know, play tested the game that might be really good at it or something that might be showing that off. But I think it'll be controlled in a way. And the prototype for that is Nintendo. So Nintendo has had game help in their games for a long time. And it's really interesting. It's like, play as Luigi. He's invincible. That's their game help, you know? And there's no punishment. It's not like you get like a special star next to your name or something if you beat it as Mario. Like they just give you an invincibility thing anytime you want it. So like I think that there's game designers and game developers don't want to break their games in interesting ways. That's why there's no cheats in any games anymore. But I think it's really convenient to have that game help on hand.
Probably more tips than an actual thorough guide the way we might do something. Yeah. So it feels like a good in-between. Like if you're not really looking for everything to be completely described to you, you can use that functionality. But I think there's something to be said for, do people want it on a singular screen? Like they clearly played that up a lot. Like you can go into your party, you can like edit some of these screenshots, whatever else, like within one screen, which I can see the comfort to that. I can see the benefit to it. But like we know that people usually use their phones as kind of like a second screen experience to the game. So there's something really convenient about that too. So I wonder if we're gonna see people like adapting to, no, I prefer it on my giant 4K TV. Like it's totally functional here. It's an easier experience. I don't have to like sit and type something and Google for it or whatever else. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see like if user behavior around that changes now that this is becoming a thing that's more formalized.
They did talk a couple different times about the new, like, fully redesigned PlayStation app for mobile devices, and we didn't actually see it. Yeah. So it's possible that some of what would be, like, pinned on the screen, well, maybe you will be able to access it just directly on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you can just toss to your phone the way, like, you know, an Apple TV experience is.
I have a couple thoughts on this. You know, one, game developers, game help kind of picks apart the work of the game developers, right? They're like, ha-ha-ha, we cleverly hid this Korok seed, you know, underneath this rock, or there's a Cult of Cosmos member tucked away on this island, and game help is like, here they are. Here's all 50 of them. Here's all 100 of them. So I don't like, there's a tension there between like, if you're the one making the game and then you're the one sort of allowing people to break your own game and pick it apart. Just like, here's the answers to all the puzzles that we spent 6 years building. Like,
yeah,
it feels more appropriate for that to come from a third party, like, you know, a guide writer, a game maker, than the people that made the game itself. And yeah. Some companies like Ubisoft sell that to you. They sell you maps that are like, here's every treasure chest in our game. So it's like, is that going to be baked into PS Plus now? Like,
and there's still print guides that are official that are, you know, have a deal with the developer and they sell you a book, right? Like that's still a business too. That's interesting. You know, there's also like an audience consideration here. Like part of game help and the reason you want help is to kind of like get through a game. And I think people tend to, like, I'm just judging this from our comments, people tend to like use it like crazy because it's really popular, but they don't like to brag about using it. They're kind of like, you know, oh, I got through this game on my own. You know, like that's like the sentiment you hear a lot more than I loved playing along to a strategy guide, even though both are fine ways to play games. I'll tell you what, there's probably more people out there using strategy guides than not. So I think it depends also, like, can your friends see you using tips on the PlayStation thing? Like, I wonder if it'll be
are all your trophies with a little disclaimer. Yeah. Tips function.
Yeah, I mean, like,
or like, true. Sam's watching a boss guide right now. Would you like to watch him?
Yeah, share screen.
No, I'm not. No, it was an accident. I didn't mean to click on that. Share screen. Did you like to show Tina that you're watching a baby?
Do you want
to
tweet this
babies?
Now?
Yeah. Would you like to tweet it? You're cheating. We'll see.
And you know what's interesting about these features? These are all from the patents that we covered earlier this year.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's totally right.
About the game help that was built into the UI and tailored to you specifically and may even offer sort of like microtransactions that you can purchase. It's all stuff that we heard about earlier this year.
That sounds like a good news feature.
Yeah.
All
right. I'll work on that while we finish this episode so nobody's confused.
All right, let's switch gears from PlayStation 5 to Xbox Series X and S. We have the launch lineup, the official launch lineup. It is 30-something games. That's a lot of not next-gen content.
No.
We call that cross-play now, Damon. That's the euphemism.
Cross-play is a different thing.
Oh, no, sorry, not cross-play. What are they calling it?
Smart delivery.
Smart delivery.
Cross-gen? Well, so a lot of these games will be featuring smart delivery.
Because in our list, it's like, yeah, all the smart delivery stuff.
I don't know how Microsoft found itself in this position. Like, I have an Xbox Series X pre-order, and I'm actually excited for it. And they have lots of, you know, very friendly features, and Game Pass is amazing. But I don't know how they found themselves launching a new Xbox without a single, you know, exclusive or first party game. There's literally nothing.
I mean, they were willing to delay Halo, right? Like man, I so badly want to be like a fly on the wall in the room where they like made that decision. And like, it's always, I guess I shouldn't say always, like it nearly always has to be the right decision, right? Like, games are delayed for a reason, but it's still such a hard decision to make. I'm in the same boat as you, Damon. We're like, I'm really impressed with the Series X. I like the console's design. I like the decisions Microsoft is making, but I don't have a Series X pre-ordered, and like, I don't feel any motivate. Like, I don't feel like I'm missing anything by not buying that console this November.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a feeling shared by a lot of people. You know, it's supposed to be the more powerful console. Assassin's Creed, recent Assassin's Creed games have been absolutely beautiful. So Assassin's Creed Valhalla could very well end up, you know, looking the best on Xbox Series X, but it's also available on Xbox One. So it's like, if you don't really feel like splurging $500 to play that one game, it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the last generation, the launch lineup wasn't super interesting. I think at the time I was working for Kotaku, and I think I did like a ranking or like micro reviews of all the PS4 specifically launch lineup. And it was like, you know, some interesting games, but it wasn't anything big. Like, it needed a year within its lifespan to really get going and pick up. So it's not super surprising to me that the launch lineup for either console necessarily isn't going to be the biggest banger. It's more about the investment rolling forward of some of the promises that they have and some of the studios that they've acquired and what those are going to result in. So it's more of that long-term investment.
Damon and I worked on the polls for Next Gen Console Watch this week, which are really interesting. What are your favorite console launches of all time? And we put like three games for each. I just went back and I looked at what the launches were. They're so bad. Like, console launches are always so bad.
Unless it's a Nintendo console.
Yeah. Nintendo has had some really cool stuff from the start. They usually have a Mario game or a Zelda game at the start, right? So they've really focused on that. But we also have a little bit rosier memories, because there is usually a December and January kind of like release window. And we don't have as much of that this year, which is surprising to me. Like, everything's either coming out in November or you're waiting until next year, some later time.
Yeah. Last gen PS4 and Xbox is the first time I remember like launch day versus launch window. Like, there was a big, like, it's coming launch window. And then they got very generous with like, it's like 6 months still.
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Tina's exactly right. Like, it takes a year, and particularly for third parties, you know, because they don't make money on the hardware, right? And they're not motivated to sell hardware. So they're in a really, like, the console transition is fraught with peril for like the EA and Activisions of the world, because they have to sell, you know, 10 million copies of their AAA games to break even. So they have to continue bringing them out on last gen I don't know when the inflection point is, but at some point, there's enough next-gen consoles sold where they can start like dropping off and not having the last-gen versions of games. So we'll just have to wait and see on that, I guess.
Yeah. I think there's still a case to be made for the Xbox, and why I'm excited about it is that it's just, things will look the best on it. So, like, you know, Assassin's Creed is probably going to look just that much better on the more powerful system. It just is, and it's got, you know, it's set up for that. And I think that's really cool and exciting, and that's what next-gen is really all about. I also can tell from Ryan's fantastic preview today. Check out Ryan McCaffrey's preview of our of the Xbox. It's just really, really cool. It answers a lot of the questions I had. And he mentioned in there that the system is not using the power to show us what it can do yet. So it's like, of all the things that Xbox put out, even though we're all talking about them as like, oh, I could play this anywhere, or that there's no exclusives or anything, it's also not showcasing its full power. And that's usually true, but it's really important for this system to do that, right? This system should be showing us something really amazing right now. Mm-hmm. I also picked out the two games I'm going to play. I'm going to play Assassin's Creed on it and Tetris Effect. And I've never played any Tetris Effect. I didn't play the last one. So like, I think this one will be definitely one I'll try.
Tetris Effect is really good. It made me cry. I
remember you saying that.
Yeah, I think Dornbush too. Sam, you and Damon both brought up graphics comparisons. Like, I kind of forgot, like, that's such a huge part of what IGN does around the launch of a console. Then we eventually kind of stop doing them as often because everyone kind of understands how the games look on the different consoles. And like, we're getting that back, and that's really exciting. Of like, we all know, or we think we know, that the Xbox is the more powerful console, but like, how much more powerful? Is it much more powerful? Are the games going to be really comparable? And, you know, of course, games on the Xbox One were still beautiful, but like, it was undeniable that the PS4 just had a little bit more muscle behind right? And like, we don't know yet. Like, we don't know, like, man, are games going to run at 10 FPS worse on the PS5? Or are they super, you know, neck and neck with each other? And of course, it's always on a game-by-game basis. So like, the devil's in the details on this stuff. And like, we're not really going to know until after these consoles are out in the wild.
Yeah.
But like the acknowledgement of PS4 was always a little bit better than Xbox games was kind of what gave it the leg up, aside from some of the marketing and PR and communication pitfalls that Xbox fell into. That was the big sticking point. So people always opted to, well, why wouldn't I get this game on the PS4 if I have the choice between the two consoles? So if those, I don't know, like 4 extra teraflops or whatever it is between the two, if it actually comes to some level of visibility in those graphics comparisons, I could easily see people shifting in that direction to where they're like, why wouldn't I buy it on the Xbox Series X, even if it's going to look minimally better, because obviously you want the best experience. Mm-hmm. So it remains to be seen, and we're going to have a couple heavy hitter games and some of those graphics comparisons, and then a consistency in that narrative to see where people are going to inevitably make their choice.
Yeah. And we should mention the launch lineup is a little bit better on PS5, but it's not really that much better. You know, like even Miles Morales, you can still play on your PS4. Mm-hmm. Demon's Souls is exclusive PS5, but you know, most everything on Sony's side is also.
They do have a launch window game, though. They have Ratchet and Clank in their launch window.
They do. All right, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Cleveland did, the person, not the city. I recently purchased Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, and found myself flip-flopping between using the thumbstick and D-pad. I eventually settled on the D-pad because it just felt right for the game, felt that it increased my movement accuracy. My question is, when a game offers the ability to use the D-pad instead of the thumbstick, do you find yourself using that option? I often find myself using the D-pad for platformers and side-scrollers. If I'm forced to use the thumbstick in those kinds of games, it can throw me off. Perhaps it's a generational thing.
What? How do you play Splunky, Damon?
D-pad.
Yeah. Yeah, I play 2D games with a D-pad. I mean, a thumbpad is intended for 3D movement and control, right?
Yes. Even something like Streets of Rage 4, even though you can like move back and forth into the foreground and background, I still use the D-pad because it just feels right for an old-school brawler, arcade-style game like that.
It's kind of the difference between like mouse and keyboard versus controller. Like, obviously, if you're playing a first-person shooter, you get more accuracy out of a mouse and keyboard. But if you're not familiar with a mouse and keyboard, or you're not usually spending your time there, you're actually probably not as accurate without some level of practice. So if your familiarity is with the controller, I'm sure you would opt with it for a controller. So using that analogy, I think it's the same. Like, if there's somebody who doesn't play a ton of platformers, they might opt for just, you know, the left stick because it's what you're experiencing in a lot of other games. So it kind of comes down to what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
My answer is a little embarrassing. I try to do the D-pad and I just find myself using the stick all the time. Like, I'm just like, I'm using the stick. Like, I just slip into it.
Yeah, my brain has been burned into using the left stick nowadays.
Yeah. That's interesting. And like, I don't notice that much of a difference, but like, I demand a D-pad, you know, like that's something like I think is important. And like, I was upset when the Switch doesn't have it. And then also I didn't like it when it was really tiny on the 3DS. But like, and I use it. I try to use it, but then like I realize like, oh, I'm doing totally fine with the analog stick.
But so even when you're playing like Mega Man Legacy Collection on Switch, you use the analog stick?
Yeah, that's a really good example. I reviewed that and I kept on thinking about that while I was playing it. And there's only like, I remember one example where I like the stick and why we should use the stick in games is that Pac-Man has been like improved so much by that stick. Like a D-pad is not, Pac-Man is a four-directional game. It should just have a D-pad basically, or a joystick that goes up and down. But when you're playing Pac-Man on a joystick, you like grind it in like this circle shaped aperture, and you're kind of like swooping it around, right? And it kind of feels like that. So, and then in Pac-Man DX, there's collector CEDX or whatever the heck it was called. Mm-hmm. I know how to bunch of letters after it. When you did that, you would grind with little sparks around the edge, like the analog stick knew that you were kind of doing that motion. I always loved that. And then also, I thought that was really cool. And then also, I'm mad at D-pads forever because I think playing Street Fighter on them, it sucks. And all my friends got really good at Street Fighter 2, and it just would kill your thumb to do like a rotation on it. That's not what it's for.
It's actually more accurate with fighting games, though, when you use the D-pad, if you're quick enough.
For sure. That's the point, right? Is that it's supposed to be eight directions, and you're supposed to hit only those and not anything else, right? So it's like really accurate.
Yeah, except personally with Marvel vs. Capcom, when it comes to that franchise, much more left stick, actually, because I feel like I can nail those like down up or down left or like those moves a little bit easier.
Yeah, and that comes from the arcade stick for sure, even though that's like a mixture. It's digital, it's not analog, but it's in like a grooved contour, so you can do these swoops.
But I still
can talk about controllers all day, man. This is exciting.
I can't believe how in the year of our Lord 2020, D-pads are still so terrible by and large. Like the NES D-pad in 1984 is better than most D-pads that are around today. Xbox has actually really figured it out. Like the Xbox D-pad is great. The PlayStation D-pad is terrible. Like it's hard to use and it feels bad. And then Nintendo's just kind of given up. So like
they're keeping the patent. That's what they're doing.
Also,
they have those D-pad extensions too, to where you can get more of that fluid movement out of them. It has like more quadrants available, so you can like pull off additional moves.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't the reason why D-pads are so bad is because Nintendo owns the patent to the NES controller D-pad, and so no one else can copy it?
I don't know if that's a fact because they don't even own the patent to the NES, because you can just make an NES and it's fine. They gave up on that.
Make a clean system.
That was true at some point. And D-pads were bad for a long time because they were competing on that level.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, I was just going to say, there are third-party companies now, like 8BitDo, that are making third-party controllers, and I think those are pretty good. Pretty happy with their products. This is Thomas Chandler. He says, I recently decided to download No Man's Sky since I had heard so many good things about the work Hello Games has put into it since the Rocky launch. I immediately fell in love and earned the platinum trophy after about 40 hours. I was wondering if there was a game any of the Omega Cops picked up long after its release and loved.
So basically any game that's come out with expansions or DLC, so you waited for all the content. It's like
that's a good reason to do it, right?
Yeah.
So many games.
Lord of the Rings.
No, I just said so many.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. That may be up there, although they're still making new stuff. My example is probably Crusader Kings 2. They had some insane Humble Bundle where, like, now in hindsight, I understand it's because Crusader Kings 3 was coming. But you okay?
Yep.
The DLC for that game normally costs, like, you know, they've been making it for years. It's like hundreds of dollars worth of DLC. And they had some crazy bundle where you could get it all for like $20 or something cheap. And so just piled on like a million and one expansions onto Crusader Kings 2. And had a grand old time kind of trying to take over. I think I started down in Ireland and tried to take over all of Europe. And then because I denied Catholicism, the Pope was not happy with me. And that was the end of that.
Have you played any Crusader Kings 3?
No, not yet. But, you know, it's definitely a Justin game. But
couple of years you will, and it'll be just like this question.
There is some truth to that, though. Like, that is... Yeah, everyone sort of lauds post-game support as like, that's the gold standard now, right? You want a developer to support their game for years and years. But like, in the back of my head, I'm like, maybe I don't want to put 100 hours into this game at launch when you know, they're going to add on systems and new areas and new races and new this for a long, long time. Like, maybe it is worth waiting. I feel that way about Civ these days now, too.
Yeah. I got Civ 6 on Switch a year or two after it had already been out. And I think that's, it's like right up there with Breath of the Wild for my most played Switch game.
Which Breath of the Wild would be a good game to wait on, because now you have so many resources from so many players who have discovered so many crazy things. So you might be more like, if you've, you know, stopped playing the game, you wouldn't get to experience it. But if you're still actively playing, that's one way of doing it. I don't really have a proper equivalent, mostly because, you know, we play games as they come out just to stay current. I've skipped The Division, the first one, because everyone said it was so horrible when it came out. And I know that they, you know, supplied it with lots of patches and made some additions and changes. But I waited basically unknowingly for The Division 2, because I assume, you know, they had gone through some of the criticism from 1. So I suppose that counts. I waited on the series in this case rather than one specific game.
That's interesting. Sam, anything for you?
It's the exact same point that Tina made, that like I, you know, pride myself in playing the games that I want to play quickly so I can talk about them and share my opinions, not only professionally, but just like personally. I like the you know, I love going to an office and talking to people about our games or whatever the substitute of the office is now. So I want to be part of that conversation. But there was a time in which I was, you know, in the early stages of my career. And I remember thinking like, I missed the Xbox One entirely, for example. So I went back and I got both Halo 1 and 2, played those like, you know, 6 or 8 years after they came out, and they were so good. I remember doing that for a couple of like really big games, like Half-Life and Half-Life 2. Actually, I never played Half-Life 1. I played only Half-Life 2 and then the Orange Box, but still like way after. I played Portal only when it came out. But man, those games are so cool to go back and play, because in that period they held up. And I don't know, there's probably like, you know, it's hard to say what would hold up from the last like 6 years that I really like to go back and play. I feel like I've given everything a fair shake.
Yeah. I would agree that I pretty much play just about everything that I'm interested in playing as it's released these days.
What about Fortnite?
I haven't played it yet. Yeah, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, I played it.
Waiting for the right moment.
Got it.
Although Spelunky might be a good example. Spelunky came out on PC and then on Xbox Live Arcade, but I never played it there. I didn't play it until it came to PlayStation Plus and was free on my PS4. So that's crazy to think that this game I've spent so, so much time in and has brought me such joy, I didn't pay anything for, in addition to my monthly subscription.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we all like educating ourselves by going back and playing very old games. That's just a fun thing that we do.
Yeah. That's a fun Sunday morning activity for myself. Mm-hmm. One more email before we get to Video Game 20 questions. This is Augustus from Pittsburgh. It says, now that Halloween is fast approaching, the fans of GameScoop have to know, now that everyone has been working remotely for months, where is Ricardo O'Skeleton? His absence from the show was like a gaping hole in my heart. Please tell us, GameScoop fans, that Ricardo is safe and spooky this Halloween. Sam, were you in the office yesterday?
Yeah, I've been in the office a few times. I haven't seen the skeleton. I've seen the potatoes.
Yeah, was that what they
mean? Is Ricardo not on the TV? Is he not on the CRT?
No, because we're moving offices. So I was like packing up a bunch of our retro games. We have like this like kind of little retro nook with a bunch of NES and Super Nintendo games and all kinds of stuff. Packing that up. But the skeleton was there and I had torn that down. I don't know. I don't know where the skeleton is, but we did have a potato skull skeleton, which is there, and then a potato Ricardo with Damon's face on it. Yes, Ricardo, and then Yaman Hatfield. And the yam has a giant, glorious, green, full shrub coming out of it.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, it's so healthy, and it's used its own energy to make this second plant, just as it's supposed to, without any soil, just sitting on the desks between Tina and Damon and his desk.
And then water.
Any water. It's been totally fine. And it was going really well for Ricardo, the potato skeleton with the skeleton head. But things have taken a turn for the worse. Last time I went there, that potato had gone total shrivelly. I don't know what happened. And those are both on your desk, Damon.
Okay, good.
Pablo says it's very soft to the touch still, though, because it looks like a rock.
Touching it?
I think he was there and he was like, I got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unbelievable that with like, well, I tell my young children what a plants need to grow. They need sunlight, water, and soil. And it turns out that's a lie.
No,
because
they don't need soil.
There's a huge plant growing out of that yam, and you don't need any soil or water apparently.
Or light. Man.
There it is.
That's the that's where it got all shriveled.
The shriveled one. Yeah.
That was a full size potato for months and months and months with a big shrub out of it too, and then it just disappeared.
It looks like The Last of Us.
Look at it. Yeah, it does look like The Last of Us.
Very much like The Last of Us. Oh, here we go. This is Yemen Hatfield. Yeah. I don't know. It's not. Yeah. It's autofocus is.
But you can see it looks like a beautiful bouquet of awesome flowers.
Yeah. Where I sit at my desk, Ricardo was on that shelf to my left. So I still have to go into the office to grab my things, and I will definitely grab Ricardo.
Where did it come? Where did he come from?
It was for.
It was from a Scoop fan.
But I don't remember if I bought it for set decoration.
Tina, you and I got those from Safeway.
That's right.
Just to prank Damon.
That's right, because a Scoop fan had sent you, Sam, I think.
Yes, I was really hoping we weren't going to go back into this.
But that was the inspiration. And so, we went to the local Safeway and pranked it up. Yeah, that's what happened.
Wasn't there like a wedding involved in this? There was that runaway contest to put my face on things, and then somebody was like, and then I put it on a potato.
That's right.
So here's what we need to do. We're just going to delete this segment, and we're just going to say, oh, Ricardo's alive and well because it's a $10 skeleton from Safeway that we can just easily replace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Shane from Leeds, UK, and he has an intro. He says, in a year of redacted with redacted, redacted, and the upcoming redacted, my 20 question suggestion is my favorite redacted of all time.
Okay. Is this part of the Assassin's Creed franchise?
No.
Oh, that was so good. I was going to say, when you said, okay, it's time for it, one of my favorite What We Do in the Shadows things is Nandor can't say A-OK, so he always says, O-A-K! And then Guillermo corrects him. It's A-OK, Master. O-A-K! Maybe this is about launch games in next gen, because...
Upcoming next gen.
My favorite launch
game. Can I hear the redacteds again?
Yeah.
Okay, once again, in a year of redacted, with redacted... redacted and the upcoming redacted, my 20 question suggestion is my favorite redacted of all time.
I think it's remakes.
I'm the upcoming remakes too, but which one?
I don't know.
Well, is this a remake?
Is this a remake? Was that your question?
Yeah, is that a question we should ask?
Sure.
Yes, it is a remake.
Code.
Because it has been the year of remakes.
Yeah.
We did crack the code because the upcoming is Demon's Souls, right? It's got to be.
Yeah. Can we get in three questions? Well, hold on. Can we get in three questions?
I think it's Super Mario All-Stars.
Oh.
Or I don't know what it is. Demon's
Souls remake.
In a year of remakes with Remake 1, Remake 2, and the upcoming Remake 3, this is my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it doesn't have to be the upcoming one or the one from the series.
Well, it's my favorite redacted, which is why I think it's part of a series, because you could say it's my favorite Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's his favorite remake. Damon said it's a remake.
Yeah. But in a year of remakes, with this game, that game, and another thing coming out, this is my favorite redacted. So
I got this. I can solve this. All What's this guy's name?
Shane.
Is this Shane's favorite remake of all time?
Wait a minute.
That's what we're all arguing about.
You're trying to figure out what that last redacted is?
Yeah.
We're burning a question on this 20 questions game Shane's favorite remake of all time?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh man, this is a good one.
That is really good.
You didn't get in three questions though.
Wait, didn't we basically just ask that question? Didn't we ask if it was a remake?
Well, but we know for sure.
Okay.
Well, now we know we cracked the redacted code.
Well, here's what we eliminated: any games that are forthcoming.
Yeah.
So it's not Demon's Souls remake. That was what I was trying to eliminate.
Yeah. Is this? Yeah,
isn't 20
remake?
Questions always a released game anyway?
Is this it?
I don't think so. I can't tell. What do you think, Dan?
Wait. What question am I answering?
Are 20 questions games always games that have already come out?
This is not one of our questions.
Yes, they are. They have always been. Yes.
Yeah. They have always been? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do you want to ask your question, Justin?
Yeah. Is this a Nintendo remake?
Yes.
Okay. So Wind Waker, Skyward Sword. Is this a Zelda game?
No.
Okay. So Mario All-Stars?
Does this game have more than one game in the game?
No.
Okay. Could be. Okay. But it's not Zelda. Hmm. I mean, is it a Mario remake?
No.
Same answer, Kirby. Same question, Kirby.
No.
Okay.
There's WarioWare on the GameCube. Was that a remake or is that just a game?
It was a port.
Well, yeah, but that's, that counts. It had new stuff in it.
It's got to be a remake.
Not Mario, not Zelda.
Fire Emblem?
Could be Metroid Zero Mission. Could be Fire Emblem.
Metroid Zero Mission's amazing remake. That's an amazing remake.
Yeah, it really is.
Should I ask if this game is on Switch? Narrow it down by timeline.
What would it be?
Because would there be...
I don't think there's
Older remakes?
I mean, you might as well, because that would illuminate. There's a ton of older remakes, but I don't know.
Okay.
Like
if it's not a Mario or Zelda, I don't know how many are left on the Switch.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Maybe Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem has remakes of the early stuff, but it's probably not that. Advance Wars, does that get remakes?
No.
It could be Zero Mission. I think that's a really good one to aim for.
Is this a Metroid game?
Yes.
Is it Metroid Zero Mission?
Yes.
Woo!
10 questions.
10
questions.
And half.
Yeah. The full email was, in a year of remakes with Resident Evil 3, Final Fantasy 7, and the upcoming Demon's Souls, my 20 question suggestion is my favorite remake of all time, Metroid Zero.
There we go.
The code.
It all makes sense.
Very nicely job.
That was that was an extension of a game that's kind of a good game. Like that's kind of like if somebody wants to send us stuff like that, we will try to solve it.
Yeah, coded tip. Yeah, I like that.
Like a meta game, right? Within 20 questions. Yeah, and look, Sam, really we made your heart out.
I know.
guys, do you know what next week is?
Halloween?
No. The week after. Next week is the 600th episode of GameScoop.
Wow, we have some planning to do.
Well, I mean, I don't know what we can do from home, but this is episode 599. So
wow,
maybe we can save the milestone for 650 or something.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. A year from now, maybe we can do something.
We also did you ever correct our numbering, by the way? Because I remember you. We
skipped one or something.
We skipped one. Yeah. We also cheated once because we needed another week for the big live show, right? So you didn't we do one twice?
Yeah, I don't know. We've lost
it. It all balanced out in the end.
I think GameScoop 400 or 500 was the live show, but the weeks didn't work out right. Mm-hmm. So we did like a 0.5 or something, right?
Look, our calendar doesn't even have the right years that humans in the Western Hemisphere use. So I think we're going to be okay with it.
We did skip one. We skipped episode 559 because, as we explained, that's an unlucky number for podcasts.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Podcast would ever release an episode 559.
Damon, why don't we do 559 next week and then Halloween can be 600 and then it'll be special.
I just said it's very unlucky to make an episode 559.
That's why you do it on the week before Halloween. That's the trick. Okay. And then the treat is Halloween.
Not even the week of Halloween, the week before.
Yeah, that's the trick.
That's actually maybe a good idea. I'll think about it.
Wow, anyway. Did you hear that ringing endorsement from Damon Hatfield? Yeah. That's actually maybe a good idea.
That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Tina. Thank you to Sam. Thank you to Justin. Thank you to Tayo working behind the scenes. If you have questions or video game 20 question suggestions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Control you now. are here to make you our slaves.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.